Cap, J-Hood.
This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
Watch the show on Twitch. Follow ESPN 1000 Chicago.
All right. Jeff Meller, Tyler Aki, hanging out with you in for Cap and Jay Hood this morning on ESPN 1000, talking a lot, of course, about the Bears and their Lions game on tap. Can they end this eight-game win losing streak? Do you actually want them to win? Because obviously, I think a lot of people have set their sights on their current draft status, sitting in the number two spot right now, and if they lose out, they will secure the number two spot for sure. But the number one overall pick is within reach because the Texans beat the Titans this past Saturday in a weird game that was delayed an hour because of weather.
That's right, yeah.
It had that weird overlap where, and I don't, you know, we haven't gotten into this, Tyler. I didn't ask you, but I wanted to. How did you feel about having the NFL, the majority of the slate, take place on Saturday, Christmas Eve, as opposed to Sunday?
So I liked it personally, and I know that may be a little different, but like Christmas Eve isn't a huge holiday in our family. It's really just our immediate family together on Christmas Eve, so that makes it easier for me to consume the whole day of football. But I liked it, and I like having it spread out over the course. Once we get in like the end of college football season and you do get a sprinkling of games on Saturday, I really like that. It's just an extra day of NFL football for us, and you get like the Thursday through Monday. You have the off day Friday, obviously, unless it's Christmas on a Friday. I like having it. I think it's nice to have it all spread out.
If Christmas never happens on a Sunday again, and that probably won't happen, but I would be perfectly fine with it. I did not like my Christmas Eve for personally, because I was, you know, dealing with some, I did the pregame, which was fine, but that led right into the majority of the NFL games on Sunday, including the Bears and Bills. And so I told my wife, I was like, all right, I'm going to watch, you know, all the noon games. And then after they wrap up, I'll try. And if you need, we were hosting Christmas Day. I said, so if you need some help with some stuff, I can probably help out, but let me watch the noon games wrap up so that I can, because there was, you know, whatever it was, seven or eight games happening at noon. And it's always hard. I always feel like if you watch the majority of those games, you can kind of play catch up on the afternoon games if there's, because there's only usually a couple and there were actually only two.
Especially now,
Taking place. But my wife wanted to go to Mass on Christmas Eve because we were hosting on Christmas Day. So she's like, I'd much rather go on Christmas Eve because we're going to be very busy on Christmas Day. And so I said, fine. But then it landed at four. The Mass we chose to go to was at 4 o'clock. So the games were literally wrapping up. And I was also then trying to get ready to go to church. Needless to say, it was a lot going on and it was very chaotic. Wasn't a big fan of trying to attack the get ready for Christmas Day while also taking care of, you know, whatever we had going on around the house for Christmas Eve. Just felt like it was very chaotic. Did not like it at all. Would have much preferred games not taking place at the same time. I'll say that. Although, I don't think the alternative of having them all played on Sunday would have been any better because it would have been much more difficult to consume. So when I think of it that way, I guess I would have preferred it the way it did happen. But I just don't like my Christmas Day falling on Sunday. It completely messes with my mojo.
I will say I watched an all-time low of Christmas Day basketball this year. I think I watched the Knicks-Sixers game. I believe that was the game.
Yes.
Up until the NFL game started with the Dolphins and the Packers. Mm-hmm. And then I saw the last game of the night with Denver. And was it Denver and Phoenix, I want to say?
I didn't even see that because I was watching the Bucks game. Bucks. I actually caught both Bucks, Milwaukee, and Bucks Tampa. Uh-huh.
Okay, so I watched the Sunday night game that night, and then whatever was left in the basketball game after. So I didn't consume really a full NBA Christmas game that entire day.
I think the Bucks Cardinals game killed my want for any more sports. I didn't go to the basketball after that because I was like, this is awful. I was like, you know, the Bucks win that game in overtime, but it was just, what a debacle. Yeah. The Cardinals are atrocious. And so But yeah, the recapping the having your NFL on a Saturday in the middle of a Christmas holiday was not my ideal scenario. It's going to be interesting because we have now this weekend, we've got the college football playoffs on Saturday.
Right.
Mm-hmm. How do you feel about having your New Year's Eve also consumed with college football playoffs? Is it something that has turned into tradition for you?
I wouldn't say it's tradition for me. I like having that first game that starts at, what, like 4 o'clock, 3 o'clock?
Yeah, 3, I
love that. I think it's a perfect like little segue into the night. But the other game, like, I never catch the second game.
I'm with you.
I catch bits and pieces of it, maybe. but I don't catch any of the second game,
I'm
usually.
So with you. And I think, too, it hasn't helped that I can't remember the last time you really get competitive games, mm-hmm. you know, in the semifinals. It's almost always it's almost always the national championship game that's competitive, but it always feels like the semifinals, rarely is it anything more than within 10 points, right?
Well, it's funny too, because like the first game of New Year's Eve, it feels like it's always that, I always feel like I see Oklahoma getting blown out in like that afternoon yes. game on New Year's Eve. Maybe it's like Notre Dame one year every once in a while, but it's either Oklahoma and you see Lincoln Riley there, his team getting their doors blown off because whatever offense he concocted in the Big yes. 12 does yes. not work against Alabama or Clemson or
because
whoever.
People outside the Big 12 actually tackle. And
right,
so then
exactly.
once you have to go up against a team that tackles, it becomes a little bit more problematic.
Yes.
So get ready for, I assume, TCU to get their doors blown off
yep.
against Michigan,
mm-hmm.
probably. And then, of course, I will say, I mean, I don't think Ohio State can hang with Georgia. I guess I'll ask you, how do you think this one plays out?
I think it'll be a good game because Ohio State has the offense that, like, they could turn it on.
Mm-hmm.
And you could do that against a Georgia defense that at times got a little sleepy during the year, but I don't think they'll be sleepy in a college football playoff game. But I like the optics of the great offense going up against the great defense on the other side, because Georgia's offense is solid, but they're not world beaters when you look at going up against a team like Ohio State, who's got some dominant forces on the line at linebacker in the secondary, too.
I don't know what the solution is, but I just feel like college football has missed the mark with having the college football playoff take place on New Year's Eve. Now, I understand this year, obviously, again, because the NFL own Sunday and they're not going to move off of it ever unless, you know, they can.
But what if you made it like this Friday?
That's what, like, I was going to say, is I wonder, like, I guess,
because then you own that Friday.
But the truth is, you know, is it just because college football wants to be synonymous with Saturday?
Mm-hmm.
But again, in the past, they haven't always done it. It's been New Year's Eve, right?
Well, it's been
they
New
moved
Year's
it around
Eve sometimes.
A little bit.
Yeah, like it's definitely flexible with the way that they've done it.
Now, I know initially when they started, the plan was basically to make, they were trying to, like, New Year's Eve, they
right,
wanted it
every
to be,
year, and then people hated it.
Yes, and mm-hmm. I still hate it, and this year we're going to get it.
Yeah.
And to your point, though, the problem is I rarely remember what actually happened because, unless you're really a diehard college football, unless you're a Black and Abdallah, you know, college mm-hmm. football tailgate kind of guy, you know, chances are that you have some plans going on for college, you know, for your New Year's Eve. You know, and so it kind of is hard to, like, be like, all right, I need to devote, you know, 9 hours of my day to college football watching, especially when they really haven't been, for the most part, competitive games.
Yeah.
I think college football has missed the mark with
it's
this.
It's tough, and you're never going to win when you're going up against one of the most social holidays on the calendar.
No, of course not.
You can't win that way.
Yeah, so. That's well said. It's probably the most social holiday when you consider people don't always spend New Year's Eve,
right.
or most people don't spend it with their family. Like, this
right.
is one where it's like this one's for the friends, right?
4th of July are
yeah.
probably the two, just off the top of my head, the two most social holidays on the calendar.
Yeah. So, anyway, that's going to be this Saturday. Got off of off on a tangent there because we were talking about the Bears possibly having a shot to go ahead and finding a way to land the number one overall pick in the draft. And the reason that's in play is because the Texans beat the Tennessee Titans this past Saturday, and I think, you know, they've been oddly competitive in almost
last three games.
Yeah, I was gonna say the Chiefs, Nobody really expected them to beat the Chiefs, but they took them to overtime, right?
And were in control of a good portion of that game, too.
The week before that, the Cowboys. They were right there, and the Cowboys needed basically, you know, a miracle turnover to go ahead and come back and win that game. So consecutive weeks against teams you did not think the Texans would beat, but they hung tough. And then last week, of course, the Titans, without Ryan Tannehill, with Malik Willis ushering in just some horrible football for the Titans. It was, honestly, I was not surprised. I actually thought the Texans might win that one. And then when it started, I was like, oh, yeah, they're definitely going to win this one. I have no doubt about it. So the Texans now, weirdly enough, get the Jaguars at home this week. And the Jags have nothing to play for. But everything is setting up for the Jags in 2 weeks when the Jags and Titans play head-to-head in what's going to be a winner wins the AFC South and goes to the playoffs game. So it looks like right now, the Titans who play the Cowboys on Thursday this week are likely going to sit all of their key players. And when I say all of their key players, I guess I mean Derrick Henry.
Yeah.
You know, maybe Jonathan Simmons.
Let Malik Willis get the reps, but yeah.
But it sounds like the Titans are going to basically, you know, let their key players rest. And you wonder if the Jags will approach it in a similar fashion, because trying to avoid key injury, knowing that it's going to be a win or else situation in 2 weeks, but almost nothing is on the line this week. It's a very weird scenario that's playing out in the AFC South, Tyler.
Yeah, and let's not forget, Ian Rappaport pointed this out too. In 2019, the Titans did a similar thing by making Derrick Henry inactive against the Saints in the penultimate week of the season because it meant nothing. It had no impact on the standings, and then he ended up playing the week after that. It's the same situation here, and I think it was Peter Schrager that threw this idea out there that, hey, we may see these teams sit some of these guys, and that's a pretty plugged-in guy, too, in Peter Schrager.
Yeah.
I don't think he's throwing that out loosey-goosey to make some headlines or whatever.
Well, and think about this, and this is, you know, this probably hits close to home to anyone who has ridden Derrick Henry to their fantasy football championship week. I think there's a pretty good chance, because he didn't practice yesterday, there's a pretty strong possibility that he does not play against the Cowboys on Thursday Night Football, because it's a short week, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, and the pounding that Derrick Henry has taken, because he is really their offense, you know, you could see absolutely why they would want to make sure he's as healthy as possible and as rested as possible in a game where he's likely going to see 30-plus carries against the Jaguars, right?
Right. I mean, especially without Tannehill, too.
Yeah.
Like, you're going to need him to 35 carries in that game.
Yeah, so I think Derrick Henry is likely to not play this Thursday. And so that means you wonder how the Jaguars then will approach it. Will that be the impetus for them to be like, all right, like, listen, Trevor Lawrence, I assume, is going to play for them, right? Like, I don't think they're going to bench him. But you wonder, will they ease up the workload on someone like Travis Etienne, right, a little bit against the Texans? And will they play it very vanilla because they don't want, you know, and keep everything in the bag, essentially, as they're playing against the Texans, right? And so if that's the case, we've seen Lovie Smith, if nothing else, he's gotten the best effort out of his team, which, you know, is lacking talent. But they've, as we just noted, they've played some teams hard. So one more win for the Texans will propel them right now, if the Bears lose out, you know, behind the Bears in the draft pecking order.
Yeah, assuming that the Bears lose to the Lions as well. But it's not just that, too, but like the week after, you're playing the Colts, that being the Texans.
Yes.
That's a very winnable game. I mean, the Colts got the initial bump when Jeff Saturday went out there, but maybe it wasn't really a bump. Maybe it was just you were playing Josh McDaniels on the other side and the Raiders and that disaster of a franchise that we've seen play out this year. And ever since then, though, it's been a downward spiral for that Colts team, and you're going to have some advantages. Who knows who's going to be playing quarterback for the Colts when we get to week 18 as well?
Yeah.
So there's a very real possibility that not only do the Texans win one more game, they could win out, too, these final two games and really screw themselves draft-wise.
It's a crazy, crazy scenario. But, looking at it, I think you could talk yourself very easily into a scenario where, the Texans you might, if you had to pick, you might pick the Texans in both these final two games, especially the way they have competed over the last few weeks here. 312-332-3776, talking NFL and how it affects the Bears going forward. And we haven't mentioned it yet, but the Commanders have officially announced they are going with Carson Wentz this week. So that's an interesting move. They're going away from Taylor Heineke because apparently he didn't protect the ball enough over the last couple weeks. And they're turning to Carson Wentz.
Yes, the ultimate protector of the football.
Yes, not quite.
Wasn't one of his first passes when he subbed in was like one of those little flip passes that he had turned the ball over many times over the course of his career.
Oh, you mean this past week against the 49ers? I think I was at church at that point, so I may have missed that actual throw.
That, yeah.
But I did come back. When I came back from church, I saw he was in the football game, and I was like, what the hell's going on here? Craziness. 312-332-3776. If you'd like to talk NFL and the Bears, we are discussing where they're at and how the Texans could potentially affect their draft status. Mel Arnacki in for Cap'n Jay Hood on ESPN 1000.
David Kaplan. Jonathan Hood. Welcome, fans. This is Cap'n Jay Hood on ESPN 1000 and streaming on the new ESPN Chicago app.
Times in Chicago as the Bears have tied a season-long record for consecutive games lost with eight. They've never lost more than eight games in a row in a single season, and they've now tied that mark with a chance to, I guess I'll say best it, if they lose a ninth straight.
Worst it?
And yeah, worst it, to break a franchise record with a possible ninth in a row if they lose to Detroit on Sunday. They are currently, I believe it's, is it still 5.5-point underdogs as they head to Detroit? I know it opened at 5.5. I haven't checked.
I haven't checked the line.
But I'll find it. But, yeah. But it does feel like, Tyler, as Mel Arnacki in for Cap'n Jay Hood this morning, will be back tomorrow as well. It feels, this one I'm looking at, and based on the fact that I don't completely trust the Lions just yet, and then remembering how the Lions beat the Bears earlier this year in Soldier Field, thanks, I think, primarily, or at least a good deal in part to Cairo Santos, you know, missing an extra point. I do think this is one the Bears could very possibly sneak up and grab from the Lions. Now,
I'm with you.
Like, it feels like that.
And the one thing that the Lions do particularly bad is defend against quarterbacks running. They allow the most yards to quarterbacks running this entire season. A lot of that because of what Justin Fields did to them the first time when he went for over 150 yards. But it's also been a trend within their defense. Their defense hasn't really been that great. They've got some pieces on that defense, but they've had some their fair share of leaky moments throughout the season and allowing some big performances from whether it was like Geno Smith earlier on in this season. But when you get on that fast track at Ford Field and you've got a quarterback that can run the way that Justin Fields can, like, who knows? Justin Fields could break this thing open, and before you know it, it could be 14-0 Bears if the defense gets a stand. Bears' defense has actually played a little bit better over the last couple of weeks, too, especially in the first halves.
Yeah, no, and so it's moved to six now, so the Bears are getting 6 points. I'm sure you could shop around, but yes, the movement has been, of course, lots of people looking at the Lions and saying, you know what, they're still playing and fighting for a playoff position, so why wouldn't you favor them at home? And I get it, but, you know, it really does. You look at the, you know, defensively, they were better up until that Panthers game. The Lions were, and, you know, offensively all year they've been able to score points. But, yeah, I'm just looking at this one, and I don't want to say it's not smoke and mirrors. But I still watch the Lions on offense and sometimes wonder how they are as good as they've been offensively. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. And maybe I'm not giving them enough credit. And this also is, you know, part of the discussion as to when you look at the Lions, you look at the Bears, and you look at, okay, we talked about it earlier. The Bears have, it looks like we feel better about their secondary moving forward. It seems like they have, you know, starters at almost every key secondary piece. The corners, you feel like Jalen Johnson, Kyler Gordon, you're locked in with them, you know, going forward for a few years. Jaquan Brisker has proven that he's an NFL caliber player. Eddie Jackson, when he returns from the injury next year, you know, we got word that he's going to avoid surgery, so that's good news. So it looks like the secondary and Justin Fields, those are spots where the Bears are set. I look at the Lions roster up and down the roster, and sure, their offensive line is better, but I think everybody still has questions about Jared Goff, right?
Right.
Like, you wouldn't necessarily want to cast your lot with him as your quarterback of the future, even though he's been serviceable this year. The running backs are fine. You know, DeAndre Swift can never stay healthy, though, even though he's explosive. And we've covered earlier in the show the wide receivers they have, which are clearly good players.
Yes.
That's the one spot where you look at and you say, okay, they're good. But then you look across, you know, the Lions defense, and outside of Jeff Okuda, I'm not overly
Aiden
impressed.
Hutchinson, too.
True. Yeah, yeah. You're right. I forgot about Hutchinson. So, yes, they have two pieces on defense, but it doesn't feel like they're leaps and bounds ahead of the Bears, right? Which is why I can look at this and say, this could be where the upset's coming. The Bears have lost 8 in a row, and I don't think they're of the mind where they're going out to tank intentionally. And so I think they're motivated to get a win against the divisional foe. I could see the Bears sneaking up on the Lions this week.
I think so. The big conversation that we've had in Chicago over the course of the year is praising Luke Getsy for how he's schemed the offense and maximized some of the talent that he has. And on the other side, Ben Johnson for Detroit, they're having that same conversation up there. Like, once upon a time here in Chicago, we were having the conversation, yes, is Luke Getsy going to get a head coaching job? That's a very real conversation that's being had in Detroit as well. We saw the news with Nathaniel Hackett getting fired before the end of the season, and you see the odds that come out of the next coach in Denver. Ben Johnson's name is on that list. And so a big reason why they're having some of the offensive success is Ben Johnson has found a way to utilize Jared Goff in a way that a lot of previous offensive coordinators and play callers haven't.
No, it's absolutely. He's somebody who potentially could be poached in the next NFL head coaching cycle. And
36 years old, like, young guy, up and coming, offensive mind.
Yeah, and we know offense obviously rules the day.
Yeah.
If you can get an offensive play caller, absolutely, that's somebody who will oftentimes, you know, jump to the top of the list. So, and the fact that he can point to, hey, I'm having success with Jared Goff, I think that's a feather in his cap, right? And if I were him too, I'd be trying to get out of there ASAP, because I don't want to have to necessarily, you know, rely on Goff for the long haul as being the guy who I can, you know.
Right.
It's the head coaching cycles, they're fickle beasts, right? Like, quickly, you can be the hot name left in the dust 1 year later if things don't go your way. So you have to strike while the iron is hot. And for Ben Johnson, absolutely, if he gets an opportunity, it's time to go. Because, like I said, I don't know how much success you can continue to have with Jared Goff long term. But it's interesting because the Lions are sitting pretty with the Rams pick this year, right? So even though they don't have a franchise quarterback, or at least I don't think they have the franchise quarterback, they have a serviceable quarterback, and they're going to have a high pick. You know, a top 10 pick coming from the Rams could be, you know, top 5. Obviously, it was hurt a little bit by the Rams win over the Broncos this past week. But, you know, their future is set up well, but I still look at Justin Fields, and I say, boy, as good as the Lions look on paper, I think I'd still rather be the Bears with Fields.
Yeah, I'm with you, because what we see is the foundation of teams in the NFL is the quarterback, right? The foundation is there forever. The other pieces you see come and go.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's no guarantee Amon-Ra St. Brown spends his entire career with the Detroit Lions. There's no guarantee all those pieces along the offensive line spend the bulk of their career with the Lions. They just may be first contract guys, and at a certain point, you can only franchise tag so many players, and you can only pay so many guys, too.
Mm-hmm.
So you see, those are the pieces that kind of go fleeting and leave in free agency, trades, what have you. Whereas the quarterback, you're allocating and you're building everything around that. And the Bears have that. So while the rest of the pieces on the Bears, they're going to come and go, but you know that Justin Fields is the constant. You look at Detroit, and Jared Goff isn't the constant there. So by that logic, the Bears are clearly in the better situation moving forward, because not just that, you've got the picks moving forward, and the Lions have picks moving forward too, but the cap space, I think, is going to be the real game changer, because your ability to win any bidding war this offseason is going to be a big reason why I think this team is going to take a significant step from this season, where you're in the conversation for the number one pick, to next year, where I think you could be a playoff contender.
That's a great point. I'd like to explore where the Bears could potentially splash around some of that cash. We'll do that right here on Cap and J-Hood on ESPN 1000.
Cap J-Hood.
Follow on Instagram at Cap J-Hood.
This is ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
One name that I put out early in the season, probably five, six games into the year, that I wanted to see the Bears be in on as a free agent was Josh Jacobs, is Josh Jacobs. Now, this was prior to him ripping off a stretch of games where he essentially put himself, he might be atop the class. Of course, Saquon Barkley is also going to be an NFL free agent here next offseason, and he has, of course, the better pedigree as, you know, draft status goes. But Josh Jacobs, if you look at the numbers, has been an absolute stud this year. He has been, he's the leading rusher right now. And honestly, I think one of the only things that gets in his way sometimes is the fact that Josh McDaniels gets away from him. And I don't know always why. He has proven to be a good pass catcher out of the backfield, something that I don't think he's always given enough credit for, because he just doesn't get enough opportunities. But he's got over 1,500 yards rushing. He's got 11 touchdowns, and he has been at times the best running back in the league. Now, Saquon Barkley also will be a free agent, so he's somebody who's currently fourth in the NFL in rushing. Another name that I know Sylvie has brought up time and time again, Tony Pollard, is set to be a free agent. We'll see what the Cowboys do with him. He's been explosive, of course, averaging 5.3 yards a carry, and he's just 12 yards shy of 1,000. So we're talking about three running backs, and Miles Sanders, I haven't even mentioned him as well. I believe he's a free agent. So we're talking about four running backs in the top nine in rushing who are going to be free agents this offseason.
Four of the six running backs that are Pro Bowlers are going to be free agents.
And you know what? David Montgomery will be as well.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as much cash and cap room as the Bears have, I'm hopeful that they can go out and add one of those guys who I think are more Jacobs, Barkley, and to a lesser degree, Tony Pollard. I think those guys are true difference makers. David Montgomery's a nice, serviceable running back, and I know you don't generally want to pay running backs. However, when you have as much room as they have, I think the Bears need difference makers on their roster, Tyler. Mm-hmm. And I don't think, like, receivers are the elite difference-making wide receivers don't necessarily hit free agent. You're going to have to probably either draft them or trade for them. So the difference makers, I think, in this upcoming free agency cycle are likely to be the running backs. And I know that they don't often age well, but I think when you look at a guy like Josh Jacobs, you know, who is 24 years old, I mean, he's, you know, he's going to be 25. He'll be 25 next season. That's a guy who I think could be worth the money if you don't have to, obviously. I'm not talking about breaking the bank. I don't think running backs really get to break the bank in the NFL anymore. Mm-hmm. So that's a guy who I really hope the Bears are in on this upcoming offseason.
And I'm with you. My philosophy has always been, don't pay the running backs, not worth it. You can find them in the draft in late, not just find them, you can find them in late rounds too. Like, you look at a bunch of these guys, they're fourth, fifth round picks that turn into stars in the NFL. But here would be my one sort of contingency when I'm looking at signing a running back. I'm not guaranteeing any money past the third year with any of these guys, because that's when you look at the timeline with Justin Fields, that's when hopefully you're giving him the contract extension and you have to make sure you've got the capital to not only pay Justin Fields, but still field a serviceable roster around him as well to keep that window of what Bears fans are hoping is going to be a championship window open at that time. And he's going to have the fifth-year option, which you'd imagine, the way that his career's going, barring some sort of catastrophic injury, knock on wood. But you imagine they pick up that fifth-year option. He obviously has the third and fourth year coming up. So that's why I'm not guaranteeing anything to one of these big running backs in this class past the third year.
And the truth is that most running back deals anyway are usually in the 4 to 5 year neighborhood, right, and very easily can be gotten out of in the fourth and fifth year. So I'm willing to look at it, and I'm pragmatic about it. I don't know. I just don't think the wide receiver is going to be on the market. You're going to have to trade for that guy. With your current first-round status, mm-hmm, being a very high pick, you're not going to trade away your first-round pick for a wide receiver, right? Like, that's just not, I don't think, in the cards if you're picking in the top five.
In all likelihood, if the trade that the Bears would make to get a number one wide receiver, they probably don't have that pick right now.
Yeah, because you
don't. It's a trade that you're going to be trading back. If you got the number one overall pick, you could trade back, get whatever draft capital you get there, and trade one of those first-round picks that you're going to bring in for whatever wide receiver may become available.
Exactly. You know, and obviously, they've kind of made that move already with Chase Claypool. They're going to have to let that play out a little bit next year to see. Hopefully, it'll end up playing out better than it has so far to start, right? But we'll see if Chase Claypool gets back on the field this year.
Yeah.
Wouldn't be surprised if he doesn't, to be honest with you, at this point, similar to the fashion what we were talking about with Jalen Johnson, right?
And,
you know, you just wonder, is it really worth it to press him into action when you're at this stage where wins don't necessarily help you? So we'll see how that plays out. But, like, I keep looking at it and I'm saying, you know what? Where is your money best spent? And I look at a guy like Jacobs, a guy like Barkley, or a guy like Pollard, and I say, man, you know what? Go get a true difference-making running back, and because of where you're at cap-wise, you can smooth it out so that you're adding that, you know, both all those guys, I think, are, you know, or at least Barkley and Jacobs are true blue-chip running backs, and Pollard is on the fringe of becoming one.
Right.
Need to see a little bit more of him before I put him into that elite status, but, you know, and then think about how the running game, the play action, you know, think about Velus Jones's big play, the 44-yard catch against the Bills came off of play action, right? Mm-hmm. And if you have, and I just don't think David Montgomery is that guy. So if you have a guy in the backfield like Jacobs or Barkley, the attention that they command from the defense will be far different than what Montgomery does, right? And so now you have a player who the defense needs to be focused on and worried about. And I think that opens up the passing game for some of these receivers that you hope, you know, end up playing better than they have over the past few years. The return of Darnell Mooney next year, and hopefully a Claypool is more acclimated to the Bears offense. I think if you have that running back who's also a good pass catcher, and then, okay, you do the work on the O-line with you know, maybe there's one more free agent signing on the offensive line and you draft a guy or two, and maybe Tevin Jenkins comes back healthy. All of a sudden now, I think you can turn this around rather quickly. I just think the value might be there at the running back spot more than any other when you look at what's available in free agency.
Right. I will say this, though. The counterpoint is valid of if you've got the number one rushing attack in the NFL right now with this group,
why and where do you has it gotten you?
Yeah. So, like, you can't really go up in terms of a ranking in terms of where you stand within the league confines of running the football. But, I do think it would help. You brought up the play action there. It would help Justin Fields on some of those play action sets, and especially if your running back can contribute in the passing game, because David Montgomery, he's caught some touchdown passes this year, but I don't think people view him as this dual threat guy. In terms of also being a great pass catcher, he's made some nice catches this year, but he's not going to be one of those guys I look at that can break away and really make a difference in the passing game.
He's serviceable as a pass catcher, right?
And you can find those guys.
Yeah, but he's probably going to want to get, you know, a bit of a raise being a free agent himself, and so I just don't think investing the money in David Montgomery. I'd much rather you pay up a little bit, and especially because you have the room. Again, it's all based on context, right? The Bears and where they're at with their cap space, you can pay a running back this offseason, significantly upgrade that spot on your roster, and still have plenty of room going forward, right? Like, again, it's about who's available in the free agent market and where the value lies. And I also think you brought up the Bears being, you know, the leading rushing attack in the NFL. How have they gotten there, though? They've gotten there based on the strength of Justin Fields' legs, right? And I think we all agree that we're hoping this is the highest rushing total he ever has as a quarterback.
Because, or at least attempts.
Yes, definitely. Yeah. Sure. If he can rip off 10 yards per carry on 110 rushes, then yes, he might best his current status. But that would be quite the achievement. Yes, you're right, though. Like, hopefully this is the most attempts he ever has. And so if that's the case, you can still go down in terms of your numbers as a rushing attack, but you need the passing numbers to go up in, you know, in conjunction, right? And I think that's where you need to have something working parallel offensively so that you can tap into more potential that Justin Fields has as a passer.
Right. And ultimately, you want to surround him more with the pieces in the passing game, which I don't know how much of a chance you're going to be able to do that this year when you look at the free agent class. But as I've kind of stated, like, I think just upgrading some of these spots to average will make a significant jump for this team across the board, whether it's the defensive line, whether it's the receiving core. I brought up DJ Chark's name a little bit earlier. He's a free agent this offseason.
Yes.
Is that a guy that, I mean, he's a hell of a lot better than Byron Pringle. He's a hell of a lot better than Equanimeous St. Brown. Like, that's a guy that you put with Justin Fields, and who knows, maybe Justin's able to unlock a little bit of something, too, and uplift the receivers around him, as we see great quarterbacks in this league do.
Yeah, Chark's solid. The only my only concern with him is that is he very similar to Claypool and Mooney, right? He's not a true number one, so the only problem would be then, okay, well, if you're bringing him in, you know, it's a matter of improving the wide receiving core, but not necessarily the top end players. You noted to me, you brought this to my attention, Josh Jacobs was not happy with his team. The Raiders, of course, lost on Saturday night to the Steelers, the celebration of the Immaculate Reception game. But Josh Jacobs was having some success, but as to my what I was mentioning earlier, for whatever reason, Josh McDaniels got away from it. Here's Josh McDaniels upset on the sidelines.
How many times can you keep talking about sort of the same things and learning the same lessons?
Man, I'm tired of dealing with Like, every day I come here and bust my ass. I see the guys, you know, bust their ass, and, you know, and the result is not there. And, you know, for me, the last 4 years, the result hasn't been there. And quite frankly, I don't know what else to do. So, yeah, that's what it is.
That is not a happy man.
That is not a Las Vegas Raider next year.
I was going to say that. It sounds like a guy who very well could be. Now, the only problem is, I guess, you know, the Raiders can franchise him, right? And so that's but would you want to franchise a running back? I don't know.
Right. And remember, I don't know how, and you brought up how, like, we see the Raiders move away from Josh Jacobs over the course of games. I think the ultimate disrespect that they showed him this year was playing him in the Hall of Fame game.
Yes.
A game where you see third stringers at best out there, and you rolled out the guy who this year is the leading rusher in the NFL in that game. When I saw that, I said to myself, the Raiders have no respect for Josh Jacobs being out there.
So very interesting to see the NFL's leading rusher, where he will be playing football next season. Could it be with the Chicago Bears? All right, a local favorite, fan favorite, Jason Benetti, calls the White Sox games here in town. He will be doing a first this Sunday. We'll share with you what it is next here on ESPN 1000.
Listening to Cap and Jay Hood at home is easier than setting your coffee maker.
This picture of domestic happiness is missing something.
Just tell your smart speaker to play ESPN 1000.
What a way to start the day.
Cap and Jay Hood.
On Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
Jeff Meller, Tyler Aki, wrapping things up here on Cap and Jay Hood. Peggy Kaczynski and Barstool Chief are up and in for Greeny. Coming up at 10, we'll crosstalk with them here shortly. But as we went to break, I mentioned Jason Benetti will be doing a first this Sunday, and he will be calling his first NFL action for Fox.
Yeah.
Gets the call.
How about that? What game does he have this weekend?
I believe he has the Cardinals visiting the Atlanta Falcons. So my guess is Jason's desperately hoping that Colt McCoy can get healthy so he doesn't have to call a Trace McSorley game. I'm sure, Jason, it's neither here nor there from actually, but he'll do a fine job. But it will be a little more compelling if Colt McCoy can be the starter for the Arizona Cardinals because McSorley, not up to NFL snuff.
No.
If you caught any of the Christmas game against the Bucks, it was not great for the Cardinals. Interestingly, you wonder if Cliff Kingsbury will walk away from this gig, you know, because he's so fed up. I believe it was Seth Wickersham who had the reports last week on Cliff Kingsbury basically, you know, admitting it has been a trying year, to say the least. And I saw they just announced Kyler Murray has a date set for his ACL surgery. I believe January 3rd is when he will go under the knife and hopefully have a full recovery and be back and ready to go for, they're hoping, the start of next season. We'll have to see, of course, how the injury responds. But even if he is back, it has not been a good season for the Cardinals the way, and you wonder, do they already regret giving him the long-term deal that they've given him?
Yeah. I mean, that you look at how that even started, too, with the homework clauses,
yep,
and all the stuff about, you see him fading at the end of the regular season, too. But it kind of feels similar to what the Bulls were dealing with Zach LaVine, too. You felt like your hands were almost tied.
No choice.
You can't say no because he's good enough where you want to keep him. And it's not worth going through the search to find that next guy. But he's also, is he that elite level guy that can win a Super Bowl? I think the answer is also no there.
It's really an interesting test case because right now he has the third highest salary an average per year, mm-hmm, amongst quarterbacks, behind Aaron Rodgers, Russell Wilson, then Kyler Murray. And then fourth is Deshaun Watson. Think about that. Wilson, Murray, and Watson, three quarterbacks who all just signed long-term deals. And I think each team is thinking to themselves, boy, I'm not sure. You know, and maybe I'm a little bit like, but the Browns cannot be excited about, obviously, what they've had to, all the collateral stuff that they've had to deal with taking on Deshaun Watson. But then, by the way, now that he's finally played for a few weeks, he has not looked anything close to the player. And, of course, 2 years off doesn't help the situation. But you wonder, you know, all right, well, do we underestimate a quarterback not playing for almost two full years?
Right.
And the impact it might have.
Like,
Deshaun Watson may not just step right back in and be the quarterback he was next season when the year starts, right? He may need some time to really get back into the rhythm of being a quarterback. He may never reach the heights he was at with the Texans.
Yeah, and think about it, too. When he was not serving a suspension with the Texans, but when he was inactive for that whole season, like, he knew he wasn't playing. He knew he wasn't prepping. He knew he wasn't going to be a part of the Texans. What was he truly doing? He's not getting that same game-like feel. I'm not saying he wasn't practicing, because I'm sure he was doing a ton of stuff with his quarterback coach on the side there, but it's so different when you're not in the weeds of things of preparing for a game, like Deshaun Watson was, because he was just removed from the organization at that point.
No doubt about it. I mentioned Benetti will be calling that game, his first for Fox, the first NFL game he'll be calling for them. Of course, he did cover or call games for ESPN Radio, mm-hmm, when he was with ESPN. So Benetti will be on the call of that game. Who gets it? Who do you think of these names, Tyler? Who do you think is most likely to call a Super Bowl? Now, I remind people that Kevin Burkhardt, who has taken over as the lead voice for Fox this year, will call his first Super Bowl, mm-hmm, this season with Greg Olson. And, of course, Joe Buck for a long time was the lead voice for Fox. He's called numerous Super Bowls. Jim Nantz, Al Michaels, also in the booth for teams, have called plenty of Super Bowls. But with Jason Benetti getting his first NFL action, amongst Adam Amin, Jason Benetti, Joe Davis, or your boy, Noah Eagle, who has the best shot, the best path to calling a Super Bowl during their illustrious broadcasting career?
I would say it's tough, too, because you named all those guys, and they're all Fox guys, right?
Yeah.
So it's like there's that log jam there. Is someone going to go to CBS and maybe call a Super Bowl whenever Jim Nantz retires? Who would be the logical crossover there? I don't know if
What's
you can
the
really
future hold
that
with Al Michaels and Amazon?
Right,
and like,
exactly.
Who could have Super Bowls with streaming in the mix?
Right.
Now?
Or could ABC pick one up, too? Like, who knows what that's going to be like? But in terms of, if I had to play the odds game here,
mm-hmm,
and like it may sound like the homer pick, but I would say Noah because he's so young,
mm-hmm,
that like he still has that he's got a less than a, or like all those other guys that you mentioned, I think are like at least a decade older than him or close to a decade older than him. So he at least has that extra leeway where he's already calling NFL games. So he's going to have that 10-year buffer, and he's been a voice in the NFL already at his age.
There will probably have to be some musical chairs movement in order for one of those guys to end up getting a spot. But I do think, obviously, of those names, one of those guys will probably be the next guy in line to eventually replace some of those older names that we did mention. All right, so he's Tyler Rocky. I'm Jeff Miller. As we sit in for Cap and Jay Hood, it is the time of the day where we bring you the cut of the day, brought to you by Chicago Cut.
Yo.
Yes, it's boring, but it's a sport.
Oh!
Whatever.
Cut it.
It's not boring.
Okay, then you're boring.
All right, cut!
Nice to feel your fingers when you walk in today. I mean, like the last couple days, it's the frigidness where like you can feel the inside of your nose start to freeze a little bit when you're walking, and you can finally like get a little blood flowing now.
Yeah, that's, that was well described.
Hey, phrasing!
I'm going to throw that at you, though, because it definitely made me feel a little uncomfortable there for a moment when you said, feel your fingers.
Yo.
Yes, it's boring, but it's a sport.
Oh!
Whatever.
Cut it.
It's not boring.
Okay, then you're boring.
Oh!